On Midwest Week, nearly 2 weeks after the derecho hit eastern Iowa, the recovery is far from over. I'm Herb Trix, and my guest this week is Kate Payne, eastern Iowa reporter for Iowa Public Radio. So, Kate, as of right now, what's the situation in Cedar Rapids and the surrounding area? What's the continuing impact of that huge storm?
It's improving by leaps and bounds, really, every day, the situation there. As folks remember back to last Monday, August 10th, when the storm hit, in the immediate aftermath, 97% of Linn County was out of power. I'm looking online right now as of Thursday morning, it's down to about 15%. So still for those 15% of people in Linn County, I mean, it is days and days without power, and it's incredibly stressful and absolutely wearing on them and making even the most basic, you know, daily tasks so difficult. But that shows just how much work has been done in these past a little over a week. You know, in the immediate aftermath of the storm, I mean, just the amount of destruction, it was difficult to describe. You know, you have 100 and 200-year-old massive trees that were entirely uprooted out of the ground everywhere. You know, entire neighborhoods were penned in by the massive trees and snapped power lines, snapped in half. It was almost like a massive snowstorm where people had to dig out of their houses. And it took a couple days for some people and for the city to clear all of that out of the way. You had, you know, stoplights that were just gone, just did not exist. And so a lot of that power infrastructure was so, just destroyed is part of why it's taken so long to get these folks back with electricity. And for people who have medical conditions, who have to keep their insulin cold, who need power for their oxygen tanks, it's been really dire. And many people in Linn County are struggling with hunger as well.
Now, I've read that a lot of homes and apartments are now considered uninhabitable. Does that mean these people have to move somewhere else, or they might be able to move back in, or what?
So the early estimate from the Cedar Rapids Fire Department was something like 1,100 homes were deemed uninhabitable. But since then, contractors, homeowners, and the city have been able to stabilize a lot of those homes. And in many cases, it was things like removing a tree that was on someone's roof. So maybe it wasn't devastating structural damage, but still the potential danger of a tree on your roof rendered the home inhabitable. So in a lot of cases, those issues have been resolved. So people can stay temporarily. But we know the latest estimates is 250 homes in Cedar Rapids that are totally destroyed. And some of these, you know, apartment complexes where the second or third floor doesn't exist anymore. There's no roof, missing two exterior walls, utterly destroyed, completely unsafe to be inside. And then in addition to those about 250 homes, there's another about 700 homes that are significantly damaged. So certainly a lot of families in Cedar Rapids and the surrounding area that are trying to figure out where they're going to go. We're hearing that getting into hotel rooms remains an issue, that so many are booked. It's hard to find where to go. There are shelters available in downtown Cedar Rapids at the Vets Memorial Building, but definitely there's a big need, and certainly long-term for these folks.
I read, Kate, that there are people sleeping on their lawns and cooking outside. Is it because the shelter space and hotel space isn't available, or they just don't want to consider leaving their neighborhood, or what?
Yeah, so we've done some reporting on the refugee community, in particular in Cedar Rapids. A couple of the apartment complexes that primarily were home to refugees were incredibly hard hit. And it's not totally clear if just the storm was strongest there, or if the buildings themselves were particularly week, but, you know, entire buildings where the roofs have been torn away, just exploded while people were inside. Again, the highest estimated wind speeds for the storm were 140 miles per hour. It's comparable to a Category 4 hurricane. But since reporting has been done on the conditions in those apartments of people living in tents, sleeping on the ground, sleeping in their cars, we've seen a ton of aid and interest in these families, and local advocates, local service providers have really stepped up and worked with the families to come up with short-term solutions that work for them. And so that's been moving families into shelters at the city and also at a refugee support organization, the Catherine McCauley Center in Cedar Rapids. Some families have also moved into hotels or moved in with other friends and family. So their conditions have really improved substantially. But it was because in those early days, residents in those complexes said no one was coming to help them. They didn't see any interaction, they said, from government officials, from the Red Cross, and they did not know what to do. They were truly just trying to make it day to day, and that meant sleeping outside and cooking over open fires.
Now, Kate, has anyone talked to you about how this disaster compares with the extreme flooding in Cedar Rapids back in 2008?
So that's definitely been something I'm talking with people about, is how that compares. And the city manager of Cedar Rapids, Jeff Pomerantz, even said pretty early on that this derecho is worse than the 2008 flood, which is an astonishing statement for folks who remember just how catastrophic that event in 2008 was. But it's because the impact of this storm cover the entire county. You know, in 2008, so much of the impacts in Cedar Rapids were centered in the downtown. And so people could leave and stay with family in other parts of the city. You know, they could get resources in other parts of the city. But with this storm, it was everywhere, every quadrant, every neighborhood of the city was impacted. And it truly, it shut down the city for days and hamstrung telecommunications to the extent that it took a long time for folks to really dig out of their own neighborhoods and look around and realize the true scope of what was happening there.
Now, Kate, has the pandemic affected the recovery in Cedar Rapids and that our surrounding area, or have people just figured the heck with it and ignored their masks and social distancing for things that may seem more important?
Going around and talking with people, you don't see a lot of masks right now, which is really concerning because, of course, we know that the pandemic has not stopped. But some people have told me, frankly, you know, the pandemic is not their first concern right now. It's making sure that they can stay in their home. It's figuring out how they're going to eat that day. You know, it's when are they going to get power back? And so a lot of people in Cedar Rapids and in that area are truly just trying to meet their basic needs day to day. And so the pandemic is really taking a backseat to that for a lot of people. And that's concerning, of course, to local officials, to healthcare providers who are really urging people to wear their masks, to try and stay socially distanced. But something that we're hearing is just the hunger for human connection during this crisis. I mean, people were already so worn down by the lockdown of the pandemic. And now to be absolutely clobbered with this out of nowhere natural disaster, people are looking for comfort and community and help from other people. And so it's been hard to stay at a distance during this time.